Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.
Went out of business and it no longer exists. But this is a manual on how to do invisible reweaves. And if you follow this to the letter, you will create something that is invisible both on the front and the back of your cloth. Now. Oh, yes. Russ Brill is going to be scanning this manual. There he is over there. He's going to be scanning this manual for his textile department on Shroud University. So you'll have access to this data.
And it does have pictures, right?
Yes, this does have pictures.
Well, I mean, that ought to put the Turin, this nonsense that comes out of Turin, that it's impossible, you know, it just annoys the hell out of me. I don't know. I can't imagine how it must annoy you guys.
Well, one little observation here, it shows when you pull a yarn that you have freshly put into place, you pull it up with tweezers and then you snip it off with scissors right at the warp thread. If it still sticks up, you pull the garment or the cloth out and it pulls it underneath the warp thread. You cannot see the end.
Next question.
I have a comment and a caution, perhaps, for Brian. We know that Jesus had a Jewish mother, but so that the Y chromosome might be interesting because he did not have a normal father. In the biological sense, it was a virginal conception. So, I don't know, you know, the mitochondrial DNA should be okay in terms of locating it within that ethnic group and so on. But the Y chromosome might well be interesting, to say the least.
Section. In our conference in Turin in 2000, there was a statement that there was not enough DNA collected to say if it is a male or female, the man of the shroud, or the blood of the man of the shroud.
What year was that?
2000, March.
No, this was another thing. I can explain.
Let me make a quick point before I give it over to Ryan. I just want to make a point that in 1995, Garza Valdez had a sample of the blood that he, without permission, gave to Victor Tryon at the University of Science Health Center in San Antonio. He did not have mitochondrial DNA available at that point in time, 95. His test showed male human DNA heavily degraded. And Al Adler, before he died, told me he felt mitochondrial DNA, which was just coming out, he felt that the shroud blood would be a very good candidate for that type of testing. So just so that you have that as background, that was, but they did determine male, human, and by the way, both the X and the Y chromosome were there.
I believe it's a Y chromosome, but I don't know where it came from.
Yeah.
Sure, I don't know how to answer that because you have to go by on expectations. So I would expect, I mean, so Jesus couldn't have been a haploid individual, I mean, wandering around just his mother's chromosomes. So my expectation, I have to go with what the populations probably would have looked like at that time. So I would definitely have to look for a Cohen haplotype. If you don't find that, then what's the scientific explanation? There isn't any that could never be published in the would never allow you to publish that. So I understand what you're saying from a religious, philosophical point of view, but from a scientific point of view, scientists just aren't that liberal, if I can use that word. They're very process-driven and very results-driven. So there has to be, scientists are like, if I can't see it, then it's not there. And that's what we're working with. Can I hear that one?
If I may, please, there are two basic kinds of questions when we come to the shroud. And the question this gentleman just asked is a theologically oriented question. Most of us here have been dealing with the scientific aspect. The issue of transubstantiation is another issue that is theologically oriented, but which impinges upon our scientific interests. If I may, many of you will know Father Adam Otterbein. He's now gone from our midst. But one day, I was sitting in front of a Nikon optophoto microscope in Dr. David Wright's office, and I was examining sticky tape 4BD. And some of those of you who are in the know will realize that is the sticky tape that Max Wright removed from the blood flow across the anatomically right arm, or I mean left arm. As I focused my microscope, I saw these reddish particles. And since it came from the blood flow, I said, this may be either McCrone's iron oxide, or it may be blood from the man of the shroud. So I called Father Adam. He was up at Esopus, New York, and he answered the phone. I said, Father, are you sitting down? And he said, yes. He says, and I guess because you've asked that question, you must have something momentous to say. I said, well, I said, I'm sitting here in front of this Nikon optophoto, and I said, I'm focusing the microscope on what I believe may be blood. He was silent. He didn't say a thing for the longest time, and I felt like an eternity. But pretty soon he said, well, science must carry on. Move it forward.
Because I lecture to a lot of different kind of groups, I'm often confronted with questions like that. And my sort of stock answer now is that the things that we, the CERT team and others like us from the scientific side of things do are different than those from the theological point of view. But many of the questions that, like the one you asked, are really not questions for scientists. Those are tests of faith, not science. And that's a separate issue. I know you can't separate them completely, but it really is. So those of us that have worked on the science side of the shroud are really obligated to stay within the credibility of science, because you know how tough it is to get important information, credible information, out to the public. And the minute they hear that you say anything that might have any slight religious overtones, it's immediately discounted or worse.
I wanted to make some notes about the comments, especially done from Danin, because perhaps there is some confusion about the DNA analysis and the blood analysis. The first analysis was done by Palma Bollone about in 1955-56, who gave some samples of blood to Genoa University. And Professor De Stefano studied in terms of DNA these samples and found that these samples came from both male and female DNA. So the first interpretation was that there were a big contamination in the samples. Recently, Frank Tipler wrote a book in English in which he re-examined the data published perhaps in 2000 conference at Turin, in which he detects a particular species of DNA, and he supposes that it comes not from a contamination, but from a unique source, and make an and he hypothesizes that this sample was originated by a very particular parthenogenesis. Then Garzavaldes studied other blood coming from rigid human samples, and gave some results that are not published that completeness. Other samples were given by G.B.G. Drumana to me, I think to others, and they are under study.
And along more direct to your question, a lot of the tools that are now being developed in 2000, for example, we didn't have many SDRs, which have been developed by the Armed Forces Identification Laboratory, for example, trying to identify soldiers buried in Hawaii who were killed in the Korean War. So a lot of these techniques are moving forward. And I think you just can't emphasize enough. I guess I'm a great sort of skeptic in ancient DNA work, because unless it's done under the right conditions, the problem with contamination is horrendous.
Right.
So anything I think that's been done recently before 2000, it would be very, very difficult to believe that that was not contamination if it doesn't make phylogenetic sense, or if it is the place where it is supposed to be, because DNA is just simply everywhere. We have a sample just last week that came from a Pacific island that no one was supposed to have touched, maybe just the excavators handled, and maybe one other person very carefully. It was done under controlled conditions, and there are mixtures in the sample already. And it's been shown that some people just actually shed DNA. So some shed, some don't. And so there's all kinds of technicalities with this. Unless the quality assurance and quality control is very strict, it's difficult. Most labs that would have done this work probably work on human DNA, and they amplify the DNA, they copy it. And once they finish one of those experiments, there's billions of copies of that just in the air. So you have to be so extremely, extremely careful. And that's why, you know, even evidence has to be admissible in a court of law. That's why you have to show a chain of custody, you have to show where this was at, how it was handled in a certain way, was it clean. There's a lot to it, because we didn't know it, but before 1953, but DNA is just everywhere.
Just one thing I want to point out, that the STIRP team operated in their civilian clothes, often with our hands bare. We started with white cotton gloves, and we know what problem that created. And we all left our DNA on the trail. I mean, I leaned on it, I touched it, I breathed it on it, and so did everybody else. The nuns who were unstitching things touched it. The priest touched it. The Archbishop of Turin, Anastasio Balestrero, came in, took a handkerchief out of his pocket, touched it to the shroud, put it back in his pocket. So, you know, the Shroud of Turin and DNA and contamination, I'm certainly not the expert, but I was there and watched how everybody was, like, reverent around it and wanted to touch it. And so everybody left their DNA on.
Have you been in 2000 in March? They've been there to 2000.
At the
March.
At Sindonie 2000?
Yes.
Yeah, sure.
With the Scalerini and the...
Oh, you're talking about the Via Gualino. No, I wasn't there.
Yes.
So I thought if you were there, you could say what you say now.
Same
somebody
problem.
Came in front of the audience of the 30 scientists invited from the rest of the world, and he was saying that there is not enough DNA on the shroud to say if it is a male or female. This is,
I wasn't there.
You said that you have to be careful. I was careful. I didn't do it. I quote to you what was said there.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a comment. One of our collaborators, how this all started. We got a sticky tape sample of blood from Ray.
Louder.
Can you hear me now? We got a sticky tape sample from Ray Rogers with a really good little blood sample on it, and it was clearly identified as a red blood cell. One of our collaborators, Annie Merriweather, who may or may not know, works at SUNY in New York, Andy was able to analyze that. We needed to get another sample from another source, another place on the shroud. That's where Julio came in, and we got Ryan involved at another lab to try to corroborate the sequence that we found in Andy's lab. Now, let me tell you about that sample. That sample was so contaminated with multiple, this is one little red blood cell. Now, clearly, you can drop all the hair and stuff you want on it, but unless you're dropping red blood cells, it wasn't, there were on sample is what I'm saying. So it's had still so many sequences on it that it was completely confusing. What the goal was to get other samples from different parts of the shroud, and the goal still is this. We need to get different samples from different parts of the shroud to see if we can match, like a puzzle piece, pieces that might match from the various sample sites. If you can do that, and I don't have hopes that we can get any kind of full sequence, I mean, that's, I think, beyond expectations at this point, but if we could match partial sequences, that might be useful in at least some kind of geographic location. I also did talk to Victor Tryon at some great length before we proceeded with our trial. He is not at all, supportive of even his own work. He believes it also was a very contaminated piece, and he did not support the statements made in Garza's book. So I would really caution you, this is a very difficult process. You know, I think what Ryan's done right now, just to reinforce the fact that the sample was blood, is still a very important one. And if we go forward, we need to be aware we need a lot of samples, and we need them from different places on the shroud, from different extraction locations. And if we can then match an identical twin sequence in any of those various areas done at separate labs, then we might have something.
It was going to be good.
He's forgot what he was going to say. He's working on it. You'll think of it as soon as you.
Yeah, okay. Finally came back. So I think that's one of the issues. What I would envision, this probably will never happen unless there's another opportunity. But you would have to go, and I was talking to Dr. Schneider yesterday. So could you actually identify places on the shroud that likely had high concentrations of blood? Then you'd have to go in, and you could probably clean those with an air duster to blow everything else away, and then take some sticky tape samples. Or I would even wonder if there was, it would have to be sticky tape probably, or here we say scotch tape. But that's what you'd have to do, because you'd have to show a high concentration of your target molecule, and then there probably, would be some contamination. But if you could show, by the way, there are some statistical tests you can do with what we call in the business cloning, which doesn't mean we're going to make another shroud of Turin-Man, but that we're going to clone the DNA sequences, then you can do a statistical test to show if you've really captured ancient DNA. So I think that's one approach, but you would have to be able to ensure that you were sampling an area that had a high density of blood.
One more comment here. I haven't had a chance, and I apologize, Alan Wenger, I haven't had a chance to talk with him about this, but on sticky tape 4BD, that is the primary that has a lot of what we would identify as potential for blood. The other sticky tape is 2BD, which has potential for blood, but it comes from the shin on the, I think it's the right leg, the shin of the right leg. So there are at least two sticky tape samples in the Max Fry collection that might have potential for this study, but I can't think of any others. Alan has some photographs up here. He's got
photograph of blood on 4BD.
Yeah, in fact, that is so large you can actually see it on that photograph.
Questions actually for Joe, so I might want you to look at my notes here and get put a few things in here that I missed. But I don't have a lot of expertise in the shroud other than I've watched, but I have to add a couple sentences because, hey, I'm a blood bank supervisor, or have been. If indeed the blood on the shroud is AB, usually A comes from the mother, B from the father, or vice versa. There are rare times when possibly the allele could break and you could get both A, B from the mother. But to me, that does not cancel the Immaculate Conception. I think if God made the universe, he could put a fetus in Mary's womb with any blood type he wanted. But, you know, that's getting along the religious lines. However, on this A, B typing, I always wanted to know if negative control was running, because in blood banking, if we type someone A, B positive, we must have negative control, because some blood will agglutinate with everything, especially denatured. So that's one thing I wanted to ask anyone that knows about the AB testing. And right in this area.
Al Adler pointed out that the AB blood typing of the shroud was that apparently blood typing is based on certain enzymes that are found in the blood, and the absence in older blood, the older the blood gets, these enzymes degrade. Apparently the absence or low count of these enzymes yields an AB result. So it's difficult, because I know people you try to tie the sudarium and the shroud together because of the AB blood type, but I don't know that there's a real valid scientific claim to be made there, and the expert can amplify.
Sorry, I'll throw that right to you.
That was good.
I exchanged correspondence with Al. I exchanged some correspondence with Al because I had a slide in my original slide presentation on the AB blood. Because AB blood is particularly, occurs with a very high percentage relative to the other population in the general population, the Jewish population. So I thought, boy, that's cool. And it also was the typing of the miracle of the blood at
Lanciani.
So I thought, well, that's cool. There's blood there. The blood's AB. That's AB. The probability, the joint probability is like 1 in 1,000. And then Al dissuaded me. Al basically pointed out that very old blood, and probably Paul knows all about this, very old blood tends to always type AB because breakdown products in the cell walls of the blood contain the elements that normally type to A and B. Can I just say one thing, though, about this blood thing deal? I was wondering if maybe you could use the transmitted light photographs to identify the densest blood stains on the shroud and then acquire blood samples from the back of the shroud so as not to damage in any way the... Because I'm sure they're very sensitive to the appearance of the shroud. And continuing to stick sticky tapes on the front of the shroud. Somebody said that some of Max Fry's areas are already darkening faster than other areas, so you can start to be able to see where the sticky tapes were.
Yeah. Well, would it not be, I mean, I don't know that much about the shroud being
sort of a shroud rookie, but it would it not be the back of the shroud, it sounds like it was covered by the holland cloth for some length of time? Now it's another cloth, but that would likely protected from contamination for several hundreds.
Well, blood obtained from the back would be less likely to be contaminated than blood from the front.
Good idea.
That's a big plus.
Yeah. Good idea.
A private talk we had Peter Suns and I in Torino last March. And we asked them, will you be so kind to let us work on the dust that remained from your important work on rearrangement of the shroud so that we cannot work on that anymore. Will you be so kind to let us work on that? So it is not blood from the other side. It is dust out of the shroud. And he said, if we give you the dust, to study pollen, as you suggest, there are additional 50 research, and we will have to answer all of them, and we don't have the, I think they were saying, Peter, do you remember? That we don't have the sufficient manpower to handle that, so we postpone it. Maybe in time there will be less and less requests for research, etc.
Now, basically, what they told us is that when they get requests, it's being sent to the Secretary of State of the Vatican, and he and the Pope they decide if something is going to be done, yes or no. So the end decision is not taken in Turin, but in the Vatican.
Question was it originally AB positive or AB negative?
I've never heard that. Ever.
I don't remember reading the designation actually. It's always just
they just said type AB is
always. AB is always there.
Yeah. I'm not sure whether you get the plus or negative.
Those are antigens, proteins.
But what's the type AB? What's the reaction? Is illegitimate anyhow.
Mark thinks that my Maloney said that it might have been AB negative. We probably have to check the reference on that. Mark says my Maloney said it may be AB negative. We'd have to check that.
Yes, sort of irrelevant. I'm rather new to this whole straw world, and my question was, what was the size of the raised sample approximately with accusation?
The exact size of the raised sample. You know, I have to look it up and look at some of the pictures there and do an actual measurement. Or I may have it in one of my papers.
Okay.
Well, I was impressed by the diagram. And there were a couple slides that had all diagrams, and just exactly how it was cut up.
But no scale to be able to do a precise measure.
Right. You can see a scale probably over there, I imagine, on the. Yeah.
It's
when
all,
you look at a
you
picture.
Could go to land. Mario's site and do the measurement, from his site and get probably a closer estimate than you'll get anyplace else.
Yeah. If you figure the cutout piece is 5.5 by 3.5 inches, you can go from there and do a measurement based on a picture and get an exact measurement.
Mario, you're using my tape.
Mario has, he's got the Henri picture, he's got the Pia picture, and he's got Durante 2002. So you can go and measure pixels on any of those, and there's a conversion factor.
Is there a calibration target of some sort?
I don't know where he got the calibration. I'd say the calibration is probably no better than 1%. So.
Okay.
The easiest but thing to do is to look at the cutout.
For pixel
yeah.
base, that's
5.5 by 3.5 inches.
Okay. And the three labs that did the test, and they all returned essentially the same result?
No, they did not.
Yeah.
No?
No.
Could you comment on that?
Well, as we showed there, the three labs who had four different pieces, Arizona had a piece on one end and a piece on another end, which were significantly different. But each of those the samples were considered significantly different from each other, so they were not from the same population. And the reason is because the patch was in a skewed angle from the edge of the material from whence it was cut.
So the dates that came back were different from each lab?
They came back different from each lab. And what they did is they threw the outliers out. Actually, they threw out, from what I understand, quite a bit of data to make it kind of congeal into a middle range from 1260 to 1390, right? But the interesting thing about that is there's been comments that there might be some incompetence on their part or that they did not do a good job. When they did their control samples, they were right on target. They were extremely close, and they were statistically significant, and they were shown each of the different control samples to be right on the nose.
It's 1:45. I'm afraid we're going to have to move on. If you have any other questions, you might want to ask the individuals at some other time period. We also have a 2-hour C-14 discussion tonight, and there'll be time for an exchange there as well. So. So we're going to move on now to the next presentation. Thank you, Pam.
Explore the mystery at shrouduniversity.com.